You're listening to the Contemplative Light podcast with your host, Clint Sabon.
Greetings and welcome to the Contemplative Light podcast. I'm your host, Clint Sabon. Contemplative Light provides education and resources in a global effort of inner transformation through meditation and contemplative prayer. And we've got some cool stuff going on right now. One new thing that we have is that every Friday evening, I'm going to be doing emotional release and meditation sessions for a group. And it's basically kind of like a guided meditation, but it's a guided emotional release to basically release blocked feelings and clear away blocked energy that we're holding on to from the past. And anyways, I think I'm on to some really cool stuff. So it is free and you might want to check that out. I'm putting a link to the sign up page below. Hey, Rich, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while, so I'm glad that I could finally come back to talk with you, primarily, hopefully, a little bit about my book, Sitting with God, A Journey to Your True Self Through Centering Prayer. We'd love to talk about that and any other topics you want to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting. You got a book coming out, and it really kind of complements your blog and some of the work you've been doing recently. So, yeah, I mean, tell me about this book. How's it laid out? What is its purpose, or et cetera?
Sure. Well, the book itself actually is out, and it went out a week early. It's Anamkara Books is the publisher. We were going to go live or release August 20th, but we were ahead of schedule. And the editor asked me, would you like to go early? And I said, sure. So it actually was live or released this past Friday. It went out to the public for purchase in paperback and Kindle. Obviously, the book is about my centering prayer journey, but it really can become your, you know, centering prayer journey. So the book, you know, talks about centering prayer, talks about going deeper in centering prayer. It talks about, you know, your true self and who that is. It talks about the fruits of centering prayer. Maybe I repeated myself, but it talks about non-dual thinking. There's a section on Jesus, who's, you know, an important part of my life. I believe I'm sitting with Jesus when I'm practicing centering prayer. So there's a chapter really on what do we know about the historical Jesus? And then there's another chapter that discusses kind of the human Jesus and the human actions of Jesus. There's a section on paradox and what is it, a section on the cosmic Christ, and Richard Rohr, you know, talked a lot about that. So I read a lot of him to pull in some things that I learned from him. And then it really just ends with, you know, it's just a journey that I'm going to continue to be on. And so the main purpose of the book was that, you know, centering prayer has been, I've been practicing it since June of 2014. The practice itself has been so life-changing and life-giving to me that I just feel compelled to share it with others that are interested and want to learn more. I don't push it on anyone if they're not interested, but I simply like to share it because it's been so life-giving to me. And perhaps it'll be life-giving and life-changing to other people that are new to it. And the book can even help people go deeper in their existing practice. So that's a little bit about the book.
Great, great. So I'm interested immediately, what stuck out to me is paradox. I'm interested in what you have to say about that.
So some of that really is just, Jesus is a paradox. And I come back to, I guess, Amos Smith in his book, you know, Healing the Divide, he refers to it as the Jesus paradox, that, you know, Jesus is at once God and human. So I just talk about, you know, what does that mean, that someone is human and God at the same time, and relate it to the fact that we, you know, we can be a paradox. We are human and divine, but we're not God. So I refer to it as I'm little d. You know, Jesus is big D, big divine God. I'm little d because there's a piece of divine, you know, divinity in me, and I'm human. So it's really just a paradox that we are human and we are divine beings, and together, you know, they make us whole. So I just talk about some of that in the paradox chapter.
Gotcha. That's fantastic. And
I think some people get caught up on God is above us or around us, but you know, God is in us. I'll say I'm a divine being, but I don't mean I'm God by any means at all. I just simply mean God is within me. I'm little D in me, acting, and my human actions are the divinity within me taking action in the world.
Within us and all around us. Yeah.
And that's why I practice centered prayers. I mean, my actions are a result of my, you know, centering prayer practice, where I'm sitting with God and then I'm getting up and then taking action and walking with God. I think of it as I'm sitting with God and then I'm getting up and walking with God.
Right. So it's throughout the day. It's not just in your sitting time. It's an ongoing kind of lifestyle, in a way, maybe you could even say.
Yes. I mean, I don't just sit with God and then I say, see you later, and I'll see you at the next time I sit.
Right.
God walking with me and is a constant presence. And I think of it as, you know, during centering prayer, you let go and open to God, you know, the actions and presence of God within. You can do the same thing at any point. So if I'm in the middle of the day, I'm struggling with a task, I can stop and I could use my sacred word. I use an image and just come back to the present moment and refocus and reset myself. So the letting go in centering prayer isn't confined to centering prayer. You can do it like a mini centering prayer sit at any time you need to slow down and reconnect with God and reconnect with the things you need to do.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting because I've always been baffled even a little bit with books on centering prayer, because I think of the centering prayer practice as so simple. You sit down, you sit with God, you're silent and in the presence, and you use a sacred word to kind of bring yourself back if you kind of get too caught up in thoughts. And then it's like, what more do you need to say? And then people write a whole book about it. It's always baffling, but it sounds like you went into a lot of Jesus with this.
Right. I mean, yeah, surprisingly, when I liked the book, now that includes, you know, the table of contents and two forewords and some endnotes, was 288 pages. So I was like, wow. So, but no, there's a lot to talk about. I mean, talk about, you know, beginner's mind, and I talk about going deeper and the fruits, and I talk about dimensions of prayer. So I kind of go outside of centering prayer and talk about other types of prayer. So, and that's what I like to tell people is, you know, centering prayer is not the only way to pray. Keep your current practices as well. It complements your practices. So you don't have to stop doing your other prayer forms. It can be, you know, a wonderful way to complement your other forms of prayer. But yes, I bring Jesus in because I believe I'm sitting with Jesus when I'm sitting. So I thought it would be fun to have, you know, two chapters related to Jesus, where one, I just take a historical look at him and what do we know about him. And then I just take a look at his human actions. And he was a human just like us. Got angry, cried, got annoyed, all kinds of emotions just like us.
Sure. So you were telling me before this, you also do coaching with centering prayer. I'm curious to hear more about that. Like, what do you talk about with clients? How do you walk them through the centering prayer process?
Sure. And I guess each person's different. So some of the people I coach are brand new to centering prayer. So that they need to understand, you know, what are the steps? How does it work? What type of sacred word should they use? And I like to emphasize, you know, there's different sacred, it's called sacred word, but you can use your breath. So some people are physical people, so they like to use their breath to come back to the present moment. Some people, I'm a visual person. Actually, I started with the sacred word and realized I'm a visual person. So I use it, I'll call it a sacred icon. I use an interior image of a Jesus icon in my head to come back to the present, because I'm visual. Some people are auditory people, so they use a word. And some people are afraid they'll fall asleep, so they practice with their eyes open and stare straight ahead. So I talk about that, you know, what is the practice? What's the best word to use? And then if they're beginners, you know, when should they do it? How long should they do it? So we talk a lot about that. And then we talk about what are some obstacles that are getting in the way of your practice. You know, I've had some people say, you know, they're terrified of God, and God to them is a male who's angry at them. So obviously we have to
talk
through that. We have to talk through that because they're terrified to sit in. So they want to sit in silence, but they're terrified and they're thinking they're not a good person and God doesn't love me. So we have to talk through that because that's a big obstacle. And some people are, you know, they have an evangelical past and they're worried that I'm doing a form of prayer that's a heresy and is not acceptable. And we have to talk through that. And I like this. It's easier for me to say because I've accepted it, but I'll simply tell them, you know, I can't imagine how could God be angry at you that you want to sit in silence with God. I can't imagine it. And the other thing I like to tell them is, you know, we don't know exactly how Jesus prayed, but we know he went off to be alone, and we can't imagine that he was always talking the whole time, and he fasted a lot. So you have to be quiet and conserve your energy. So we can only surmise Jesus practiced some form of silent prayer as well, however it may have looked.
Yeah, I would imagine too, though, that what can come up for people is associations with God that kind of are filtered through their associations with their parents or their associations with pastors or mentors or authority figures growing up, and filtering through that, and some of those voices, so to speak, could be shaming voices.
Right. Or even their own church and either a pastor or a priest and their views, because there's many churches. Yeah, I've had some people, they want to practice centering prayer, but their church pastor or priest don't bring that here. It's not accepted here. It's not.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. They're
people like that, where they're not allowed to bring it up. It's not an acceptable form of prayer. So even though it was created by, you know, three Catholics, three Trappist monks, there's some of the Catholics don't agree with centering prayer and what it teaches.
Yeah, that's true. Catholics and even mainline people probably have, you know, the pros and the cons in them. In the evangelical world too, I know some progress is being made with it, because InterVarsity will be sending me books on that have to do with centering prayer and stuff. So if they're the evangelical publishers kind of starting to promote it some, then that's progress in some places. But yeah, I would imagine there's you know, the cons, as you're saying too. So how do you walk someone through, just say, whatever it is, if they're filtering through a pastor or a parent or their view of God as a kid, they sit with God, they feel that God is an angry man at them, and they feel so ashamed and like they're a bad person. That stuff goes so deep. How do you get through that?
I mean, one, I remind them that you need to let, as hard as it is, you need to let go. I mean, that's really what you're doing during centering prayer, is you're letting go of any emotion or thought. And it's really just a thought or emotion that's not true. So one, you have to just let go of it. And that's easier said than done. So that may take them quite a while. And then again, I'm just reminding them that Jesus, we think Jesus practiced silent prayer. And I'm reminding them that God is not, we don't really know what God is. God is being, God is life. You know, sometimes we have to say he, but we can just as easily say she. I mean, God has, you know, qualities that are loving and compassionate, like a woman perhaps is better, you know, taking care of a baby and holding and nurturing and loving a baby. And God has those qualities. And then God has some qualities that we say, you know, men may have, of strength and power. But then there's many men and women that have exactly both. They're both nurturing and they both have strength and they both have power. We just stereotype. So I remind them of that type of stuff as well.
And I suppose, too, centering prayer could work. It could work outside of a Christian context for somebody that may be considering themselves spiritual, not religious. They can still have a view of a higher power and still get benefit from centering prayer, even if it's not a Christian God, if it's, say, a view of God that's like the God of all religions or something like that. They could, centering prayer could still work for them. I'm kind of surprised that I haven't seen it filtered more into that context, you know, like 12-step groups. And well, I think it is.
The 12-step group do use it. I mean, you're right. And I've even said that to people. You don't even have to believe in God to practice centering prayer. You can open the life or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
It really doesn't matter. For me, it's a practice where I'm opening to God, and I think God is within me and praying in me, but that's where I am at on my journey. And maybe 10 years from now, I'll be somewhere else on my journey. But so you're right. I mean, centering prayer, you can pull out, the Christian components of it, and anyone can practice centering prayer, with where they're at in their faith and beliefs. And I've said that to people, and I've even encouraged if people are like deconstructing their faith, maybe this is a good practice for you because you don't know what you believe. Well, you don't have to worry about anything. You just need to sit and let go and open to whatever you think you're opening to. You don't need to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
It would be very helpful for that. And another thing I tell people to do, because I had a spiritual director a few years ago. She retired. She was older, but she was really a wonderful nun. And she told me to journal, but what she told me to do, like if something was really bothering me, so she said, write down on a piece of paper your name and then just sort of dump everything to God. What's bothering you? Why are you anxious? What's really weighing heavily on your mind? And get it all out and then write the word God. And now how would God react to you? And I kind of looked at her and said, I'm not allowed to speak for God. And she said, you are. Just do it. Just so I did. So I remember when the first time I did that, I sort of outpoured, you know, what was making me anxious and why work was busy and why it was bothering me and how stressful it was at that period. And then I was God. And then I just said, okay, God, here I go. I'm going to speak for you. And it was kind of neat what came out and stuff. And I actually had that in my book as an example. And what came out was, you know, Richard, I love you. I don't want you to feel this way. Don't you know I'm always with you? We'll together get through this. So it was kind of a neat exercise. So I'll even encourage some of my clients to do that when there's something really weighing on their mind. I'll remind them that I did this and was taught this, you know, by my former spiritual director, who was a nun. And I found it to be a really neat, valuable exercise.
Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic practice. I may end up trying that myself some, because I generally do the first part where it's me dumping everything on a piece of paper, but I haven't followed it with the God part. And I could see that really almost kind of being a cleansing exercise of kind of washing over all your, you know, anxiety or agitation or whatever it is. That's great.
And it makes me laugh because, of course, I had God was being very, you know, empathetic and compassionate with me. Maybe in the next time I do it, God might tell me, you know, get up and get moving, Lewis. You know, you're lazy and you don't have a pity party for yourself. Get moving. Because I would imagine God will make, you know, if that's how he feels, will nudge us. Because I think God nudges us out of our comfort zones. Well, definitely does.
Yeah.
I've nudged way out of my comfort zone over the last, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 years. So I think God also is a God that will nudge and push you out of your comfort zone.
Well, yeah, sure. And I also think it's helpful. And one advantage I've always kind of liked about the Christian world or the contemplative perspective, I think Amos Smith talked about like the absolute and the relative. And in this relative world of imperfection, you know, that's not God, it's an imperfect world, it's relative. I think a lot of times, too, it helps to just, you know, accept that we're going to have painful feelings, because that's just kind of the nature of the game here in this incarnation, I think.
Right. No, I mean, you're right. Life isn't always fun, and we're going to have some very painful experiences. And I guess we're, the U.S. is going through it right now with, you know, with COVID-19, and the new normal for everybody is very different from what it was, you know, pre-March or so of earlier this year. So we've all
And that's a good topic to approach spiritually, because I think one of the things too that I've noticed is that with all this pandemic, sure, there's all these kind of practical on the ground concerns about economics or about, you know, the virus spreading and getting contained, or social distancing, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing I've noticed is, like, it's really kind of a traumatic experience for the collective. Like, American society is undergoing almost kind of a collective trauma, I think, with this. And we may end up having a collective PTSD. And I feel the energy, you know, people are struggling with this. There's much more anxiety in the air than normal. I mean, it's kind of a dark time.
No, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, I think about, you know, my mother and my sister live together. I haven't physically seen my mother since February. We have spoken on the phone and we've done Zoom calls. She only lives 45 minutes away, but she's fearful of, and I don't blame her, and I don't want to come in contact with her because I certainly don't want her to get sick. She's in her late 70s. So she's very fearful. So I haven't been able to give my mom a hug, and I'd love to give her a hug, but I don't want to give her a hug until it's safe. So it's hard. I mean, we've all been forced to connect online, but there's no physical contact, and you miss hugging someone and shaking their hand and patting them on the back. And even at work, you know, actually it's funny, at work we've come closer together because we will have the whole staff will be on Microsoft Teams, and it'll look like the Brady Bunch with all of us, you know, in three rows of three people all talking. So actually in that case, we've actually gotten closer to each other. But in other cases, you know, you miss people, you know, your close family and relatives, you really miss them. So it's hard.
Gotcha. So my mom lives 3 hours away. I haven't seen her too. You've been just playing it safe. Just, she wanted to play it real, real safe, you know, with all this going on. Like, don't even risk Rich seeing his mom. Basically,
right. She's fearful, and I want to respect that. So when we talk a lot, and we text and we Zoom call, but and she walks socially. You know, she does her social distance walking, wears her mask, but she's fearful of having company. So it's pretty much been she and my sister, you know, over the last, since March.
Sure, and yeah, that's understandable, and because you just never know with this, and so. Yeah, I mean, I'm in Texas, and we've been a little bit more careless probably than you up north, but it's just a time. Yeah, people are restless. I've been fortunate, and I'm in a good place and good place to live and have plenty of resources, but I'm sure just so many people are hurting economically and with out of work and all sorts of things.
Right. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I'm fortunate that, you know, my company has, you know, they can keep functioning and we all can work from home. But obviously there's people that are in, you know, whether you're working at a restaurant or more of, forget the word for it, but like hotels and recreational type businesses or restaurants and places people go to have fun, but those places are hurting. And it's a shame because people, they can't have everybody there in their store or place doing things, and then they have to lay off people, and those people, or even like all the people that lost, that temporarily couldn't cut hair, and the barbers and the beauty parlor, all those types of people suddenly are out of work until it's safe to return to work, and that's their livelihood, and how are they going to pay their bills?
Yeah, and I feel it. I'm a very sensitive person to emotional energy for sure, and I can just kind of feel it in the air. You know, this is not business as usual. This is a kind of tragic era.
You're right. I mean, I wake up and think, okay, this is really not. You know, this is still. It's not a dream. It's real. And I keep telling myself it's going to end. I don't know when it's going to end, but I guess you have to keep marching forward. And obviously centering prayer helps. You know, a contemplative practice certainly can help during this time.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I know that I think I heard a snippet of an interview from Dr. Fossey where he was kind of saying, well, you got to kind of weigh the options here, because you've got to also weigh being too careful, because if we just lock down quarantine all the time, the suicide rate's going to go up, the domestic violence rate's going to go up. You know, you're going to have all these other kind of effects. So it's kind of like everything's interconnected, and, you know, like there's really no safe place to turn where there's not going to be multiple levels of the world, you know, that just kind of get an upheaval and go haywire. And that's hanging over our head all the time. So I guess bringing it back to centering prayer, we're sitting with God, and in a sense, we're sitting with the suffering of our fellow brothers and sisters.
Right. I mean, we are. We're sitting with past and present saints, whoever you want to call us, praying for all of us, quite frankly, to hopefully get through this tough time that's mentally and emotionally draining. And then you become physically tired when you're mentally exhausted, you become tired physically as well. So it's just a hard time. Even for me, I got to remind myself, it'll be okay. I'll get through this. Try not to not do anything foolish. Try to wear my mask. Try not to pretend everything's, you can let loose when you shouldn't let loose. Like I was in New Jersey down the shore for a week, at a house we were fortunate enough to be able to stay at. And we pretty much stayed in the house or walked safely and did not go on really on the boardwalk because there was too many people. But some people, I guess they're just tired of it, and they're out there. They're not being careful. They're not wearing masks. I think they're just either in denial or just tired of it. But that's hopefully can be a very bad thing if it can spread it, I guess, obviously, if some of those people have, you know, COVID, they're not being careful, and then they can spread it to others. But I think people are either in denial or they're just flat out tired, and they're like, I need to go back to the way I was.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, I mean, the media will make it kind of out like almost like kind of demonized states that aren't being good. And I'm in one of those. But at the same time, I completely understand people just getting restless and wanting to go out and about and wanting to hang out and have parties, you know, even in the midst of the dangers of spreading the virus. I mean, I can understand people getting cabin fever is a real thing.
Right. I mean, even, you know, I miss, there's some things that I'm not going to do them until it's safe. You know, I go to the gym, I go to Planet Fitness, where I haven't done that since early March. And I loved going to the gym, and the gym's open now, but I don't feel safe doing it. Nor do I think I can work out in a mask. I think it would be really hard to do an aerobic workout and to use some of the weight machines. So, you know, I miss that. And I miss, well, I guess restaurants are open and that type of stuff. I miss, you know, going out once a week with my wife and just, you know, relaxing and having dessert and a drink or something. You miss that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm in the same boat where I just loved going to LA Fitness, and I especially loved the sauna and going into the sauna. But I've frozen my account. I'm not going during this. I mean, I'm not going to get in a sauna of sweat, you know, even if they are open. That's the last place I want to go. So I've kind of had to change my workout routine to a combination of walking a lot in a nearby trail in my neighborhood, and then working out at home. And, you know, that's been an adjustment.
Right. And I guess, and one thing I've offered through this, I did one, it was really neat. I did a introduction to centering prayer for churches via Zoom. And I did one, and they'll be fine if I say, the Heartway Church in Davie, Florida, I believe. I connected with their pastor on Facebook, and we did a Zoom. This was in early March, but I did a Zoom, you know, introduction to centering prayer session for anyone in his congregation that wanted to understand what is centering prayer, get the basics of it and what it's all about. And then we did a sit and I did a Q&A, and then I gave them some next steps to take and resources. And it was kind of a nice 90-minute session. I've only done one. I'd love to do others because it's it was very helpful for the people, and anybody could interject at the end. So a lot of them were just talking about, you know, how this was nice, and it was nice to be able to do this. It's a nice practice. It's a practice that I definitely can use right now. And it just gave them a place to vent and complain, as well as just safely talk about how they're feeling right now during COVID-19 and prayer and being separated from their congregation and communicating virtually instead of, you know, in a church building.
Yeah, that's a good service. And I'm sure there's some other churches out there that would probably appreciate that service. You can certainly write to us, connect@contemplativelight.org. But yeah, I mean, that's a great service to provide, and to, because, you know, people are going to be getting restless more, and they're going to be at home more, and no better time than ever to start a centering prayer practice.
Right. One thing I like to remind people just in general about centering prayer, because earlier you talked about what do I tell some of the people. So, you know, I have people that are brand new to centering prayer, and then I have people that want to go deeper in centering prayer. You know, I remind the people that are new to it, you know, take baby steps. You know, the two sits 20 minutes per day really are just guidelines, but God isn't going to be angry at you if you don't follow them. So you might need to start at 1 or 2 minutes or 5 minutes. And I have some clients, they have restless leg syndrome. He can't sit for more than 10 minutes. So his sit is 10 minutes. And I said, that's fine. And why, God's not going to be upset with you for sitting for 10 minutes. So I just remind people, you know, be gentle and kind with yourself. God's delighted that you've come and sat with God. And it doesn't matter if it's 20 minutes or if it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Something happens to you when you sit in silence and do it, you know, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. Something happens to you. We sit because we love God, but God seems to transform us and grace us with, you know, many fruits, different fruits for each practitioner. And that's what I find exciting about centering prayer, is I think God graces people with different fruits over time because of their practice. So our job is really just to show up. I think Thomas Keating said something similar, you know, if you do it, it will do you. And I have definitely experienced that. So I'd like to make sure I share that with people, you know, that are new to centering prayer, as well as existing people that just, some people will say, nothing's happening, so I'm going to stop. And I say, great, nothing is supposed to happen. You're supposed to let go and open to God. Nothing is supposed to happen. It happens outside of your practice. If it happens during your practice, you're supposed to let it go, because it's just you and maybe your ego getting in the way of what you want to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of wanting spiritual fireworks, so to speak, or, you know, you want like a sudden rush of the Holy Spirit, and that there's kind of a teaching in that, you know, like why do you want that? Do you feel like you're not enough now as you are?
Right. And then for those that are, you know, have been practicing a while, they want to go deeper. You know, it's not super difficult. And I don't know if you're familiar with David Frenette's book, The Path of Centering Prayer. I don't know if you've read that.
But no, I have not read that.
Really good book. And I guess I read it first when I was newer to centering prayer, but it was better to read a little bit long, you know, when I've been practicing a little bit longer, because it's really about deepening your practice. And it's just, he just talks a lot about be gentle to yourself, be kind with yourself, be compassionate with yourself, be easy on yourself, and a lot of contemplative attitudes you can take into your practice. So you don't even need to make going deeper in God, it's not rocket science. It's not something you have to work extra hard at. You need to be gentle and kind to yourself and let go and just let it and just be in the being of God. So I think people want to work too hard and say, how do I go deeper in God? And what do I got to do? And you just need to let go and be gentle and kinder to yourself, and don't beat yourself up, and don't get angry if you've missed a sit and judge yourself. Just show up for your next sit.
Yeah, completely. And you know, that is hard. We're creatures that kind of want something extra, or we want to fix things. We want, you know, it's the, I guess it's kind of the desire that an attachment that Buddha talked about, but it's also just common for everybody. You know, I'm not enough as I am. I want something else.
Right, right. And yes, people, I guess one, they're just too hard on themselves. And two, they feel like I should be doing something. I should be doing something. And I like to tell people, you know, I think your doing is better because of your being. And what I mean by that is, you know, I do my first sit of the day is in the morning before I get up. And I on a work day, I get up 30 minutes before I have to get to work, which is downstairs, but and do my centering prayer. And then my second sit is usually like right before lunch, and I eat a later lunch, so it's closer to 1 p.m. But oftentimes, you know, I'm looking at my need-to-do list of things at work, and then I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through this and how I'm going to get done it. And this one, I don't even know how to attack the problem. But I just try to let go of it all, do my centering prayer, sit, and just be. And then when I come back to work, I eat my lunch, come back to work. At the end of the day, I look back and I'm kind of amazed that, you know, I got it done. And some of these tasks that I didn't think I could do weren't as difficult as I thought. So this is what I've learned, you know, just being and centering prayer helps you with the doing. I become more productive, not because I'm moving faster, just because I've slowed down and I'm working smarter, not harder, I guess, so to speak. So being and centering prayer can definitely help with the doing. So for those people that feel that you got to be doing, no, you don't. And you'll probably be better at your doing if you actually took, you know, a 20-minute break and just be with God.
And yeah, absolutely.
You know, rest in the rest of God.
Yeah, I find the same true, and it's kind of counterintuitive to the way we're programmed. We think we've got to do more to be better, but if we can sit and just be, and then kind of bring some added presence in to our daily lives without trying to force things, and have that same sense of allowing and just letting be, let life be, let go and let God type energy, I find I'm really more productive, you know, if I can do that.
Right, right. And in fact, I like to take, you know, I'm a goal-oriented person, and I'll type in my iPad things that are important to me that I want to accomplish either in my personal life, my health life, my physical life, and even career-related. But I like to read them just internally to God, and then even let them go, and then do my sit, and then kind of come back and look at them, and do they still belong on this list? Are they still important? And if they are, they stay there. If they're not, they get removed. So I like to take all my actions and goals and dreams to my sits before each sit, and kind of quietly read them, and then let them go to God. And then see if they still stick as I'm continuing through life. So I'm constantly kind of relooking at what they are, and some of them are getting accomplished, and some of them I'm removing from the list. So it's just God and I partnering, as part of centering prayer in my life and what I want to do, I view it as I'm becoming my true self, and it's a journey. It never ends until I leave this earth. It's a journey to my true self, and my true self never ends, but it's God and I partnering my human actions.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, to dive deeper into what you just said, I'm curious, how often do you look at your goals and kind of let them go to God and then see what stays? Like, I mean, is that like something you do once a week, or do you do that every day with your sits?
I actually do it every day, sometimes twice, you know, before each sit, at least once, but at least once or twice a day, I'm just kind of reading through the list, and even periodically throughout the day, I'm just looking at it and then adding things to it or striking things. But yes, I actually, as much as possible every day, I try to read through it and then do my sit. I believe in what's called, and for me, I mean, centering prayer is the most important thing to do, is to sit with God. But I like to do what I call my centering prayer bookends. So what can I do before the sit? It's just a nice way to have structure around your sit, and anybody can do anything before and after. But for me, it's sort of evolved into, I'm looking at my, I guess you could call them affirmations, goals, dreams. I'm reading them and then letting go and going into my sit. And then after my sit, it's any current book that I'm reading, I'll probably read it for 5 or 10 minutes. And then I get up and go on with my day. So I recommend to people, I'm saying you don't have to, but it's nice to have some structure around your sit. So do something before it, do your sit, and then do something after it, and then get on with your day. It just creates a nice, structure around your center of prayer sit. So I do it, to answer your question, I guess I do it every day. It could even be twice a day.
Great, great. Yeah, and I want to, and with all this great content and this great teaching and this great kind of experiential wisdom you have, I wanted to visit your blog. I confess I haven't been following your blog in the past few months. How often are you posting on that now?
Sure. I have, every Monday I have a meditation that goes out, and it's basically related to centering prayer in some capacity. So every Monday I have something that goes out to my subscribers, and then I like to read. So from time to time, I'll just do a book review, put it on my site, and send that out to subscribers. And then I like to interview other interesting people, and they don't necessarily have to be contemplatives type people, but probably most of them are. So I'll interview different people out there, whether they're an interesting speaker or they've written a neat book that I've enjoyed, and I'll just send them an email and say, I'd love to interview you. May I send you 5 to 7 questions, and you can answer it as long or short as you'd like. And I'd love to share it with my community because I think your work would resonate. And many times they take me up on it and we'll send it back, quickly or in a few weeks or a month. So I do that as well. That type of post gets sent to subscribers. And then, of course, my site itself has, a centering prayer page that talks about centering prayer. And if you're new to my site, and when you subscribe, you get my free ebook, which is about a 12 or 15 page PDF. Describing, it actually talks about centering prayer, and I kind of made it in a question and answer section where I think the top of the page is a question and then it answers it. Then it moves to the next page, which is another question you might have. So that's a free ebook for those people that join my site. I have a resource page. So as I'm coming across books and courses, I put that out there that I think would be valuable, and websites that I would find to be valuable. And then, of course, I have my book page and my coaching page. So the site is 4 years old at this point. So it's grown from 4 years ago to what it is now. And it started as a weekly blog and has now turned into, a weekly blog and book reviews and interesting interviews and a resource page and coaching and my first book. And who knows what it will look like in another year or 5 years.
Right. Right. That's absolutely wonderful. And you've certainly been a big help to us too, promoting our classes. I should plug that. We have classes and you promote those, and that's been a big help to us. And I certainly really value, our conversations, Rich, because I will say, over the course of kind of knowing you the past few years, you're always very positive. I feel like you always have positivity and curiosity and kind of good vibes.
I appreciate that. And I think it's center in prayer. So it's, center in prayer as taught by contemplative outreach, it's prayer. It's a practice and a relationship with God, and I believe that too. And then it's a portal to contemplative prayer, which is really which is hard to describe. It's just being with God, removing all the obstacles to God as much as we can. I don't know whether we can truly remove every obstacle from God, and even centering prayer is the same thing. As you center as Thomas Keating taught, you know, you're shedding all your forgetting what they say. You're removing all the crap, and all the emotional trauma and crap is being released, and you're healing, and all the clutter is being removed, and you're connecting closer and closer to your unloading. That's the word I was looking for. I guess he talks about unloading because we all have a ton of repressed things. So no, I think centering prayer has definitely helped me become a more confident, excited, positive person. Because I'm connected to who my true self is, which really is the little D, as I said earlier, the little divine being, not God, but the little divine being.
Awesome. Awesome. That's beautiful. So, well, I mean, we'll put a link to your book, I guess, under this podcast, and a link to your blog also, if people want to go deep into this and get the book, Sitting with God, A Journey to Your True Self Through Centering Prayer. Did I get that right?
You got it right. And then one thing I'll encourage people, and I put it out there on social media, is I love to engage and talk with people. So as people are reading the book, whether they're currently reading it or have finished it, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or my contact page. I'd love to dialogue with you. Don't be afraid to talk with me. And if you send me an email or a message, I'm going to read it and I'm going to converse with you. I'd love to do that with people.
Awesome. Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Rich, for your force of positivity, and good talking to you today.
The same. So thank you for having me on. I'm glad I was able to come back after a couple year hiatus. So thanks for having me on the show and letting me share with your community. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.